Coleman. Good morning, brother. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing really well. Got to sit on the kids' first lesson of the day, homeschooling. So it's always a good day, or good way to start the morning.
Man, homeschooling. You are continuously more based, I find, over time. Like, you're obviously still the same person. I'm just, the more I find out about you, the more I realize, man, this dude is pretty based. Shane does that too, you know, he does the homeschool thing.
Yeah, thank you. I recommend it for anyone that has the means and is able to do it. Understand, it's not, you know, it takes a lot of time, requires at least one parent to be at the house. But when you compare kids that are homeschooled, that kind of what's going on in the public school system, it's crazy. It's I highly encourage everybody to really look into it.
Yeah, they're like, I mean, these, my experience is that kids that go through homeschool versus public school are usually light years ahead of their peers. Just in terms of all kinds of things, like general knowledge, critical thinking, the ability to withstand peer pressure, just all the things, right? And like, you always hear this, that the comment against homeschooling is, oh, but they're just going to be some kind of social retard and they're not going to be able to function in society because you're separating them from other people. And I find the opposite is true. Like, I think homeschool kids are more present. They seem to be less like addicted to their technology. I mean, don't get me wrong. Plenty of homeschool kids still play games. They still, you know, do the things. But compared to their public school peers, their public school peers are way more retarded socially because their faces are in their phones constantly. They're just glued to it. So, I mean, that's just my observation.
No, I think that's very accurate. Observation. I do own a business, so we hire a lot of high schooler, college age people, and I personally look for people that are homeschooled. I just feel like the graduates that are coming out of high school are just, you have to hold their hand through everything. And we're homeschoolers, I can just give them, you know, guidance, and then they're on their own.
That's an interesting insight. So, parents, if you can do it, suggest you do it. You're giving your kids a literally, like right there, a leg up in life. Like if hiring preference is based upon whether somebody's homeschooled or not, that's very interesting.
Yeah, just one last thing on that. Again, there are so many resources today versus, you know, 10, 15 years ago for homeschooling. Seriously, look into it, because there's so many co-ops around every community now, where you're not just teaching your kids one-on-one. They do a lot of events, a lot of museums, also have homeschool days. There's a lot of sporting activities where they actually have a homeschool week, so your kid won't be isolated. Don't think that's one of the restrictions or negative things about homeschooling. They'll have just as much opportunity as anyone in a public school.
All right, going around, I want to say good morning to Terrence, Wade, Gabe, Hunter, Mike. Morning, guys.
Good morning, guys. Day two. Exciting.
Good morning. What's up, guys? Hey, I wanted to share, too, on the homeschool topic. There's an option you can check out that's available to me. It's called Hybrid Homeschool. We just got my son. He's a first grader, and he's at a Christian academy. And he goes there for about half a day. We pick him up at noon, bring him home, and we continue his education at home. So it's kind of a blend. But there's, yeah, just like Coleman was saying, there's a lot of options out there.
Very cool. Before we move on, I also homeschooled my kids for some of their growing up time. And it was very good, is what I'll say about that. Shout outs to Macro Minutes in the audience. Hey, what's up, man? We've got, oh, also look at that. We've got Terrence Yang throwing you an invite. Okay, let's dig into a couple of quick things so you understand what our mission here is, so there's no ambiguity about it. We're here to help reach people who are new to Bitcoin, and teach them about Bitcoin, maybe help guide them a little bit. from a veteran's perspective, but also many other Bitcoiners, like, so you understand these spaces, everybody's welcome. If you're a Bitcoiner and you have knowledge to share, you're welcome on this stage, unless you're a sociopath, of course. I don't let those kind of people up here. But if you're a Bitcoiner and you want to teach people and help people and share with people, you are welcome here. We're going to be hosted by veterans on the regular because this is a, I mean, the production is being covered by Bitcoin Veterans. For those of you who don't know, Bitcoin Veterans is a nonprofit organization that was started by veterans. It's run by veterans, and our whole thing is all about educating veterans on Bitcoin, doing a bunch of stuff in terms of like healing and growth, whether it's spiritual, emotional, leadership, and then finally, you know, we're all about like just forcing each other to be better as men, not necessarily being good men. Understand, there's a difference between being a good man and being good at being a man. And we focus on that second part because most of the institutions that are out there are all about saying, oh, you need to be a good man. And then they define what they think that means. So if you haven't read it, by the way, highly recommend this book. It's called The Way of Men, written by Jack Donovan. Go check that out. Give you some kind of an idea of where we're going with that. If you're a veteran, DMS will get you connected into our extended crew of 600 plus growing veterans with lots of different areas of things that we talk about, everything from resilience to homesteading to citadels to ham radio to meshtastic networks to firearms training to on and on and on and on and on. If you're interested, hook us, just shoot a DM to the Bitcoin Veterans handle here. That's the main host. And also check out in the nest, you'll see this thing called the Daily Intelligence Bulletin. This thing is being prepared by a former Navy SEAL sniper. It's got a lot of geopolitical stuff. Some of it is Bitcoin oriented, but mostly it's geopolitics and so on and so forth. So feel welcome to check that out. All right, then. Morning, Gabe Lord.
Good morning, Alex, and good morning, everybody. Looks like we've got some amazing folks joining us today. Day two, man. Here we go. It's it also just happens to be my favorite day of the week because we'll be streaming our Bitcoin Veterans podcast tonight. And so looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing everybody out there. And yeah, speaking of the Daily Intelligence Bulletin, I was actually just perusing through that. And it just, I mean, it's something that we know, of course, but I had a moment of clarity that we spend so much of our time, so many of our waking hours filtering through information to determine what's relevant, what matters, what's true, what's not true. And so it's, and as I'm scanning through the DIB, as we call it, it was just a stark reminder of that because there's so much out there. And somebody had posted something earlier about how all the algorithms are basically the same now. Whether you're, you know, on the red side, the blue side, or whatever you want to categorize yourself as, the algorithm is all basically the same. And when I go into the DIB, it's completely and totally different than any other form of information that's out there. And I just think it's awesome. So that's how I've been spending my morning so far. I look at, you know, every Monday through Friday, as soon as that gets released, I'm in there. So yeah, that's how my morning is going. I'm reviewing, pure signal and, content that is not jacked up and crazy looking, that just makes perfect and total sense. Yeah. So if you haven't checked it out, it is in the nest. I recommend taking a look at it.
We'll actually dive into some of the topics in the DIB here in a little bit. I do want to take a moment and say good morning to Terrence Yang. What's up, brother? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to see you. Glad to be a part of this. Really happy you started a daily Bitcoin Spaces.
Had to be done. I think there was some consensus around it. And to be honest, I was kind of enjoying not hosting Spaces. Like I did it for 2 years, every day for 2 hours. And I, for the time that I wasn't doing it, I was like, man, this is pretty good. I could kind of ease into my mornings. I could go out on my deck in my underwear in the sun and lift weights and just like, it was great. But people kept, you know, saying, Alex, like, what's up, dude? Like, there needs to be a space, right? So like, after much pressure, and also thank you to Bitcoin Veterans, the fact that the Bitcoin Veterans podcast has been successful enough to actually get some sponsors, we can cover the costs of producing a real show. And that, you know, that's just the thing. I didn't want to have a space where it was just like any other space where people just get in there and talk crap to each other about what kind of barbecue grill they have. I wanted it to be a place where there's real content that's not wasting people's time, that's produced in a professional way, that's turned into a podcast, all those kind of things. So thank you to Jacob, producer Jacob, who's agreed to come back and like make this all happen. That's awesome. Appreciate you, bro.
That being said, are we going to be having a spaces to argue about grill crap?
Yeah, I was going to say, are you guys charcoal guys? Or, is there any propane maxis in here? That'd be kind of weird.
Jesus Christ, it begins already. Macro, good morning, dude. How are you?
Good morning, man. It's been a while. Saw that you guys were doing this. I wanted to hop up and actually just real quick mention to you, I got a person that I've become friends with in Meatspace. He runs a group called Heroes Movement, and they basically get veterans into rowing. And I raced at Nationals with him this summer. We won a race together, and I thought it would be a great contact potentially for the Bitcoin veterans and the Heroes Movement guys, because they're absolutely aligned in spirit with you guys. I don't know if any of them are Bitcoiners. I didn't really get a chance to ever talk Bitcoin with any of them because we were always focused on the rowing component of things, right? But either way, I feel like it'd be a good meshing of two organizations potentially that could be mutually beneficial. So I just wanted to toss that out there. And if you're open to it, I'll DM you. The guy's name is Mike that runs it. I'll DM you his info.
Heck yeah, absolutely open, man. We're always open. We're continuously interested in making those kind of connections and just seeing, you know, where we can lean in and help whatever organizations are worthy of helping, and absolutely all about that networking and building out networks of people who are supportive of each other, especially if they're you know, like-minded people. By like-minded people, I think a lot of Bitcoiners are very like-minded. We share a lot of the same values, even though some of us have like wide-ranging views on some things. I mean, Bitcoin is the thing that unifies everybody. For example, take Terrence here, Terrence Yang. He and I, our personalities are almost complete opposites of each other, and some of his values are not the same values as mine. However, like, freedom and control of our freedom and our money is highly valued by everybody, I think. And so there you go.
That's right.
Hunter, good morning. You were trying to say something a little while ago, and we kind of cut you off. Or not. Got to be ready on that mic button.
Hey, I'm here. I'm kind of in listening mode. I'm out here on a zero turn cutting grass at work. I was just jumping in earlier talking about the homeschool setup that I got for my kids, that hybrid, but I didn't have anything else to add to that. I'm kind of just listening to you guys now.
Okay, roger that. Go back to the Forrest Gumping.
Sorry, that was pretty
good. I would do that for free.
I just like mowing.
Yeah, I'm on a mower all day, every day, but it's great because I can, you know, listen to podcasts all day and just taking a bunch of information. And I'm out here in nature, so it's better than being behind a desk.
All right, you boys want to hit some of these topics in the DIB today. So one of them that was interesting is that there seems to be a lot of people making a big deal over the fact that so far the DNC has not mentioned crypto or Bitcoin basically at all. In I guess recently they released a bunch of their, you know, what their objectives are, their platform goals. And some Bitcoiners are framing this as it's super conspicuous and it's thunderously loud, the fact that they're completely silent on this issue. I don't know. What do you guys think?
If you don't have anything nice to say.
Go ahead.
Don't say it at all. Is that what we're doing here?
I honestly think that they see kind of like the writing on the wall, and they see what a lot of the things that like crypto, quote unquote crypto, really meaning Bitcoin, is like standing for. And I don't think that they really like that kind of messaging, because they seem to be the party that's all about sequestration, centralization, and power grabs. So I think that they're just trying to stay away from it entirely.
To be fair, I saw something that the Trump campaign published maybe a week or two ago, and it was like, you know, 24 policy points or something, just a summary of their platform, and there was no mention of Bitcoin or crypto in there either. So just being completely balanced and fair. Just wanted to point that out.
I'd say just like both parties will buy your votes with stupid policies. If you're dangling enough cash, whether it's the crypto people, Mark Cuban, or Bitcoiners that did it with Trump, they will do a speech at least to hear people talking about whatever it is you want them to talk about up to a point. I will also say it's very new. Kamala's been the presumptive Democratic nominee for president for only about a month. So it takes time. And then the last is, I was on the Crypto for Harris live stream. Mark Cuban spoke and threw Bitcoin under the bus, but also Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and several other electeds spoke. For Schumer to speak positively about crypto legislation he's trying to get passed, realistically, I think he is leading, but also speaking with the Harris people. So I think it's a matter of time before they come out with something. It could be after the election if they decide that the Harris people decide that it's not important enough or it's too divisive. Remember, a lot of Americans and their family members have been scammed by crypto, so crypto is not that popular. We saw my friend Chris Pan speak at the OSU commencement ceremony, widely booed. Crypto is just not popular, and Bitcoin by association is kind of collateral damage.
That's a great assessment. I actually agree with all that. I think that it's just not important enough for it to matter. And what makes it important, exactly what you said, Terrence, like where's the donor money coming from? How much is the donor money coming from? And based on that, and you only have so many topics you can say these are our things that we're championing, right? So if you have a list of 100 things, there's going to be a dollar sign attached to each one of those things, right? And based upon what has the most dollar signs, it's probably going to get on the platform.
Yeah. The last thing I'd add is real quick. It could be important in their eyes, but divisive, and they're not, and it kind of evens out. So they think it's best not to talk about it. So, for example, in 2008, when I worked on the Obama campaign, yes, I made a mistake, but they didn't want to talk about Taiwan or China, because the thinking was, not that I was talking to anybody close in the campaign, but the thinking was you might be better off just not talking about Taiwan or China at the time, because it was too divisive and it was kind of not that much upside, and you might say something that would really piss off one side or the other.
I think if you look at like the total, like the actual voter though, like the whole package of policies, I highly doubt that there's many that would vote Democrat if they had like some talking points about Bitcoin or crypto or anything like that, because most of their other policy positions run counter to a lot of the things that Bitcoiners believe in. So it's not really like anything that's going to win them any votes. So that's probably
why they can They can definitely get crypto votes if they are kind of good and let them scam in peace and not go after a bunch of SBFs, right? But also they'll lose some votes because there's just way too many Americans, I think, that have been scammed by crypto. So even though they have owned Bitcoin and crypto, they've lost a lot of money in crypto because of all the rug pulls.
It's still a virus in the system, though. Those people in state government who, elected officials who are both on the left and right who are pro-Bitcoin, and they can be, where I'm at, completely opposite, polarized in all of their other views. Whether or not they take a platform on it's, you know, a different story, but they've invested.
Okay, can you elaborate on that, Wade? By the way, for those of you who don't know, Wade is very close to the political landscape in Alaska. He works daily with legislators and whatnot up there. So, Wade, would you say, you know, from the people that you're talking to up there, are there Bitcoiners on both sides of the political spectrum?
Yeah. For starters, most importantly, the agency itself where I work at is becoming, went from just a couple to a decent percentage, let's say 30%, 20 to 30%, and that's a supporting agency for the legislature. Then there's probably five legislators who are starting to grasp it, whether it be Bitcoin and shitcoins or just Bitcoin. And they are people both sides of the aisle, and they're not just like one side of the aisle or the other. They're extreme on either side of the aisle. So it Bitcoin really doesn't care where they're at politically, but at the same time, whereas those people who are on the Kamala end of the spectrum there, who are pro-Bitcoin, they may not take a stance, but, and I don't want to elaborate on who they are, but it doesn't mean that they're going to drop their personal opinion of Bitcoin just because they don't announce it, you know, and they have to, they have to state that they own Bitcoin when they relinquish their finances. So we find out who the Bitcoiners are because they have to divulge that they've invested in Bitcoin. But that doesn't mean...
Hold up there 1 second. I take issue with the idea that just because they own ETFs that they're a Bitcoiner.
No. One senator who's on the left side of the aisle had to relinquish who, you know, that they own Bitcoin. It wasn't a ETF. It was before the ETFs released. So,
okay, my bad. I thought you said ETFs. By the way, I was just messing with you. Please continue.
Yeah. If they all had to state that they own the ETF, you know, practically all of them would in some way, shape, or form now, right? But yeah, it's nonpartisan. So, and it just because. The whole point was that just because they are on the left doesn't mean that they don't own Bitcoin and they don't value Bitcoin and they won't protect Bitcoin. It just means they won't take a public stance on Bitcoin. When there's legislation that goes through that protects their value, they're going to end up splitting the party.
Why won't they take a public stance on Bitcoin?
I'm sorry?
Why wouldn't they take a public stance on Bitcoin? Is it just not popular enough, or they're not sure what to do, or they can't get anything passed anyways? So
it's the money. They may not want to go against their platform. So if I go against the leadership, then that's going to be bad. But if the leadership is also a Bitcoiner, but the national policy for the platform, for the party, goes a different direction, they may not go up against, you know, try to rival that until they have a personal reason to. If they have a large stake in Bitcoin, they're more likely to protect it.
Like, I see it as like I said, I don't think there's that much for them to gain in terms of voters from the left. But like, if they are like an advocate of it, and then they have, you know, so somebody follows them in, and then there's, you know, there's negative like price action, then, you know, there's a consequence for that, right? Like, I don't think they'll gain anybody, but they could lose somebody if like the like market towers or something, and somebody loses money. So it's just exposing them to risk. I mean, I think had, you know, somebody mentioned like Kamala's relatively new to the top of the ticket there, you know, had she had time to, you know, formulate a strategy and show up to the Bitcoin conference and all that stuff and try to, you know, counter it, then, you know, maybe there'd be different. But I think at this point, just like, I mean, it's not, the juice isn't worth the squeeze for them. There's other things that are much more popular with their base for them to go after. To me, like Trump going to the Bitcoin conference and stuff was just kind of a tack on, like, hey, you know, you guys align with a lot of the stuff that I sometimes say in my rhetoric, so I'll come here and hopefully grab a few voters. It was like kind of an easy add-on for him, but it's, you know, doesn't really align and match as much with the left and their messaging and stuff. So it's just a lot more complicated for them to swoop in and get some votes, and it doesn't really have an upside, but it does have a potential downside. You know, if the left follows them into Bitcoin and then, you know, price action is negative, then they'll stay home and say, oh, that guy lost me money, you know. So that's the way I see it.
Well, not to mention, like, I was going to pose a question to you guys. When's the last time that we saw an investment asset that was, like, capable of attracting political ire like Bitcoin does? I don't know if there's been one, at least for the last couple of decades, and I'm betting that a lot of these politicians are also not wading into this conversation because they don't know how to navigate it either.
Yeah, I think they're just mostly not educated at the moment because, you know, if they did spend the time and learned about mining and energy and jobs and what it can do for the states and people in general, that would be great. But I don't, you know, like a lot of us, they don't look at it as a protocol or as a network. They are looking at, like you said, Mike, as an investable asset. And, you know, most of the voters who, you know, maybe see Bitcoin on their Robinhood app or something, you know, they don't want to be pandering to these people who, you know, could suddenly just lose a lot of money, you know, pre-election. Like, what if they start talking about Bitcoin and, you know, and it goes down to 30K and suddenly people are, you know, jumping on them, and or they want to separate themselves from Trump because, you know, a lot of things that Trump comes out and is for, they obviously want to be on the other side of that. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it, you know, for us, right, we think about Bitcoin 24/7. It's like, it's almost a single issue reason to vote. But
well, it is.
But I what mean, are we
most? Yeah, well, I don't know. What do you think the number is? Where's Terrence? Terrence, what do you think the number is? What percentage of the population has Bitcoin penetrated? As far as Bitcoiners, not just people who own like
$10. In terms of real Bitcoiners, it's not very high.
Mike, do you have a thought on
maybe
that?
Maybe a couple percent. And then you have a couple percent that have lost significant amounts in Bitcoin and crypto, and you're never going to support it, or they think it's a scam. They'll blame others. So one thing I want to point out is because there were so many elected officials at the federal level, House representatives and senators speaking, they have three senators. Not all of them spoke live, like Gillibrand from New York was on recording, but they all spoke positively about Bitcoin and crypto. More crypto than Bitcoin. I don't think they really understand the difference between the two. So you got to think that at some point the Harris administration will be come out with something pro, quote unquote, pro Bitcoin and pro crypto, or relatively. And remember, they will steal good ideas. The Harris team has shown that they will steal good ideas from Trump, or ideas that are popular, at least, even if they're not good ideas, like the tax, no tax on tips. There's some other things. They've hijacked the words liberty and freedom, right? Liberty and freedom, talking more about reproductive rights, the right to be yourself, LGBTQ plus, whatever, blah, 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 do what you want in the bedroom. Those are kind of libertarian type of values that...
Here's the question, though, is that, like, you say that they will adopt certain, like, positions that make it look good or whatever. They'll even steal them from the other side, which is whatever. I don't care about that. But do you think that the Harris administration, should she be elected president, would be a pro-Bitcoin administration or would be an anti-Bitcoin administration?
It'll be bad for price short term because they're going to continue to prosecute scams on and off Bitcoin. So expect to see more mini SBF prosecutions. She's a former prosecutor. She's already said, allegedly in private, Bitcoin is for criminals. We know Bitcoin is for anyone. Just like the physical cash in U.S. dollars is used by everybody, including criminals and people on the edges of society. But that will, going after, if she just kind of maintains the status quo, maybe eases off the samurai, Ross Ulbricht type stuff, she will, I think, help Bitcoin be separated from crypto, because there's nothing to prosecute or for the regulators to go after against Bitcoin. There's no CEO. It's decentralized. Like, what are you going to do? It's all the scams, mostly off Bitcoin. That's where the money is. Meme coins on Solana, Solana itself, Ethereum, yeah, and all this other crap. But go ahead.
Just in this conversation, I'm thinking of it. And it's like, allowing crypto and the scams to exist is a great way for, you know, the government to just accumulate more Bitcoin, right? Because a lot of them, they're not holding their crypto scam profits in whatever scam thing they're using, you know. So it gives the U.S. government the opportunity to continue stacking effectively for free, right? Like, they just shut down whatever thing they label a scam, take all the Bitcoin out of it, and then just adds to the stockpile. So, I don't know.
In a Trump administration, maybe. Yeah, I see the Harris administration kind of confiscating maybe more assets from crypto companies, because they'll enforce harder, but also see it as a revenue generating thing. So, yeah, it definitely increases tax revenue, or just revenue from fines.
I really don't think that the politicians have any care in the world as far as how much Bitcoin's confiscated to be held on their balance sheets. They just don't care.
They don't care about what's held on whose balance sheets. What are you talking about?
They don't care. They're not going, hey, you know, if we pass this legislation, or if we take this stance, we can go ahead and prosecute just to put more on the government's balance sheet. That's not how they think. But sure, there may be agencies that have a view of Bitcoin and they want to prosecute whoever, but they're not doing it with the sole intent of stealing it to put it on the government's balance sheet. If they could put it in their own pockets, that might be an incentive, but not to put it on the government's balance sheet.
I see that. So in other words, like if a specific agency that they have ties to were to confiscate it, and then somehow they could have a say in how that Bitcoin is liquidated and spent, they probably care about that. But aside from that, they probably don't care. It's like,
yeah,
that's a nice jar of cookies, but I can't reach it, so I don't care. Mike, what do you think?
I think that I wanted to make two points off the commentary. You guys have been kind of going down. I think that the Harris presidency or administration, if they were to win, they would probably attack Bitcoin, not through the direct means like you guys are talking about, but through the indirect. Like, what I'm thinking about is Bitcoin mining. I think that they would probably follow down the largely left-leaning kind of narrative as far as like energy consumption is bad, and they would go after not just Bitcoin but really any general crypto mining, which would be really bad for Bitcoin, at least in the U.S. not necessarily globally, but it would be bad. And then I think that kind of what Omar was getting at with the kind of, I can't remember how exactly he structured it, but he got me thinking that like it also would, the administration would be kind of like motivated to keep like a lot of the crypto stuff, like the crypto scams, staying alive, because it might not be like massive amounts of liquidity, but those, like having those options as kind of like liquidity overflow buckets would allow them to kind of like marginally keep like some of the inflation conversation relatively muted, similar to like how the rest of the legacy market, just like we all know that there's a lot of just bullshit liquidity piled into it that's keeping a lot of like the richer enriched and all that. So I don't think that the Harris campaign or administration would be good for Bitcoin or crypto in general.
Hey, Mike,
yeah, so just to finish my point on that, just real quick. The reason she would be good for Bitcoin longer term is by making a clear distinction, but by going after all these scams on top of and off of Bitcoin, it makes it these scammers kind of have less incentive because deterrence, they're going to jail, they're losing money, whatever. It's considered a scam by the administration. That the if see under Trump, there's going to be freedom to scam. So yeah, the Bitcoin price will go up, but also you'll have alt season, and shitcoins will go up too because they're going to be scamming all over the place in peace, right? With the SEC and DOJ under the current administration, they've gone after SBF and a lot of other folks. CZ arguably got away with murder because he is leaving with, I don't know, $30 billion, serving a very short sentence. He paid a comically low fine, even though Binance had to pay a big fine. So I think that you'll have more real Bitcoiners. So let's say the Harris administration continues to be pretty anti-Bitcoin, anti-crypto, so to speak, like the current administration, you'll see more Bitcoin, real Bitcoiners buying real Bitcoin, self-custodying, not giving an F, even if Bitcoin is banned, right? They're going to do that because you can't stop it. So the more based Bitcoiners will continue to adopt Bitcoin. The people that are more compliant will sell their ETFs to comply with the law, or they're worried it's a scam, or just kind of give up on it, and the speculators will give up. So you could argue that longer term, it's actually better for Bitcoin to have Operation Choke Point 2.0 or 3.0 and continued enforcement against all the scams on and off Bitcoin.
Hey guys, I'm going to refresh because I can't see who's talking. So I'm going to refresh if you guys can just let me back in when I do.
Omar, it's that way for everybody though.
Oh, is it? All right, never mind then. I'll just
continue. This shit's bugged. I can see who's talking.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Coleman. What's up, man?
Hey, I got a question for you. If Warren loses her bid for re-election this year, how much of the pushback, or how much do you think that stops the pushback with the Harris, if they were to win, with their anti-Bitcoin crypto campaign?
That's a good question, and I'm going to answer you with some levity or humor. I think Elizabeth Warren is a demon, and I think that if a demon gets wiped away, another demon is going to fill its spot and take the place. So I think that somebody's going to pick up that standard that she's going to drop if she does lose that position, and somebody's going to just answer the rallying call. I don't think that necessarily these kinds of characters are going to go away because they all in order for them to gain attention, all of these politicians, you're going to fill a particular archetype to gather that attention and get more power behind their campaign.
It's wild how accurate that is. If you look at the senator from South Carolina before, what's his face there, Graham? It's like the same person. It's crazy.
Good morning to Jordan Gambrill on the Operation Libertas handle. How's it going, brother?
What's up, guys? How's everybody doing? Sorry to join you late.
Yeah, I can't believe you did that.
Don't let it happen. Yeah, dude, I'm running off an hour of sleep on my weekend morning, and I still beat you here.
I mean, I've been up since 4:30. I'm just, taking care of business,
Also, shout out to Lisa Huff in the audience, since there's a lull in the conversation. Just wanted to call her out.
I'm trying to work on my not talking all the time thing. He says as he continues to talk.
Are there any more interesting points in the div that we want to talk about? Or I'll go ahead, Omar.
I was just going to say, grand scheme of things, we were talking about, U.S. government, having Bitcoin on its asset sheet. I look at it, one of two ways. Either everybody in our government is as stupid as they seem to be, and, they're just running it into the ground with fiat. Or somebody somewhere understands what's going on, and they're basically just setting up a nation-sized rug pull with fiat, and they're stacking Bitcoin and gold for whatever comes next. At least on paper, I know a lot of people give pushback, but on paper we have the largest gold reserves in the world. People want to see it audited, but that's a different story. But we do know that in terms of holdings of Bitcoin, I think the U.S. government is still number one or near the top at that rate. So that's why I think the potential for enforcement action in order to confiscate more Bitcoin is there. That's my view. of like the grand scheme of things. Like, I don't know, like, the, you know, the U.S. government doesn't want to say, hey, we're you know, Trump's line of like having it as a reserve asset. They may not, you know, they maybe don't want to commit to that, but they'll do it quietly by just saying, oh, we're just confiscating this and it's so complicated to sell, so we just leave it there. That's kind of my view on things, which is why I don't know. I'm not sure that I feel it matters who actually gets into office, like how much different they'll actually be in terms of policy and stuff like that.
It's an awesome point. I got to jump in. One thing that we can be sure of is that any government action that is going to take place that has anything to do with Bitcoin or anything else for that matter is not going to be for our benefit. So any politician who gets into office or any regime that says they're going to add it to the strategic reserve or stockpiles or they're going to whatever they're going to do with it, it's not going to be for us. And so what we can expect is further debasement whenever possible of any currency that's in place. And another thing we can expect is more war. And so those are always the actions that they're going to take. In addition to that, they're also going to implement policies that may seem like they're going to benefit us people, the people. But in fact, these are going to be policies that are going to continue to do what every policy does, and that is going to be to take away our power and transfer it into their hands. That is what we can expect. As far as the immediate situation in front of us with the election and which parties are talking about what, I think that what we're seeing right now is each party, especially the Democrat Party, they're really just going to double down on what their messaging already is. And the thing is, when you're already in the seat of power, they're not going to do anything riskier than kicking out the guy who was already in line, which, you know, in my mind, from what I can see, is nothing short of a coup. But to kick him out of the way and to try to get somebody who is somewhat of an incumbent to move on up into that seat. But they're not going to deviate from their messaging, from their core. They're going to double down on their base. They know that they're not going to go out there and change anyone's minds. They're not going to win any new voters. And so at this point, I believe it's a get out there and vote initiative, where they're just trying to get everybody that they have, whether they exist or whether they're imaginary or whether they're already dead, to get out there and to vote as much as possible. Now, on the other side of that equation, you've got, you know, big DJT out there, and he is in a position where taking a little bit more of a risk like this may be advantageous for him to win the office. And especially with his interactions with the Libertarian Party, and it looked like there was a little bit of a shift in support. He's smart enough, and he has enough people that know how to do what they're doing to know that they can focus on that. Whereas where, yes, they're doubling down on their base, but also they have the necessity, really, to exercise a little bit more of a risky strategy and try to win over a new pocket of voters. And so that's where I believe that's where they're going in and focusing a little bit more of their conversation, some of it. And Mickey, you brought up a good point earlier. But they're focusing some of their attention, as we see by Trump's presence at the conference in Nashville. But really, I don't know how much further it's going to go beyond that. However, at the end of the day, whoever is in office, whatever this looks like in a few months, and we're going to see policies that are in place to not benefit us, but to benefit somebody else. And that's my take on that.
So one thing I want to go back to is the U.S. government is vast and extremely bureaucratic. So the people that confiscate, right, that's law enforcement, and then they just sell it. Whether they confiscate a Picasso or a Lambo or Bitcoin or whatever, they're just going to sell it. So that doesn't mean if they confiscate cocaine and dump it, destroy it, that doesn't mean they hate Lambos if they confiscate a bunch of Lambos from criminals or
doesn't mean they hate cocaine either.
And they win. I almost went down that analogy, but I'm pretty sure they don't sell the cocaine.
God, you know, just popped into my mind.
All the other assets that are legal, like Bitcoin and whatever else that they confiscate and sell, that's just what they do. So that's the default for Trump. If he can get the Bitcoin stockpile, that thing passed, or maybe executive order. I'm not sure what law is required. I'm guessing a law needs to be passed. That would be an exception, right? Because it's one part of the government telling the other part of government what to do. But they have a process right now where any confiscated items that are legal to sell, they will sell it for cash. And it's not hard to sell Bitcoin for cash because they do it all the time. Countries around the world have confiscated Bitcoin and sold it to, kind of beef up their treasury or whatever. But just kind of as...
I'd like to point out, by the way,
the CIA would never sell illegal drugs to finance black ops or anything like that.
Of course. They would never it would be very hard to get those drugs from the feds to the CIA. Maybe it happens. I kind of think that that doesn't happen.
Well, I mean, if the CIA actually operates all the drug cartels, then they don't really have to, right? They have plausible deniability. They have other... I'm just kidding. I don't know that they do. That'd be wild. I want to say good morning to Shane Hazel. What's up, brother?
Good morning, man. Hearing you guys talk about all these political things, it just, I was like, oh golly, it's like a crackhead. I just got to get in here and say something, I guess. But yeah, Mickey makes some good points, and I think it's not either or. I think it's a combination of both. You've got a bunch of just dumb politicians in office, and a lot of them are compromised, right? Like, let's face it. A lot of the honeypot stuff that, you know, the Epstein was rolling around, those were, you know, that's why they own all the porn sites. They can put these guys into silos, entice them, put them in front of a honeypot, and now they've got them. So there's a lot of those idiots that are out there in this bureaucracy that we've got. And, you know, they're paying attention to polls, right? Like that's what they do. They put a stupid poll in front of these guys and they go, hey man, this is not going to poll well with your voters. Do this or don't do this. And then you've got the people who are actually very sophisticated. The very sophisticated people at the highest levels of bureaucracy, not government really, because most of government's just, like I said, I think they're mostly puppets at this point. You know, you got maybe Thomas Massey, who's doing some good things, who's calling out like dual citizenship, but the rest of these guys in extremely high bureaucracy, they're moving money. And I think, you know, at this point, you know, everybody knows that they're not going to stop spending. They're going to have to spend money faster, over that time. So it's really, you know, a matter of what can they get away with? And I think this is where this gap between the public and Bitcoin is exploitable. How do we convince people that, hey, you're being systematically robbed, your wealth is being systematically extracted every day? These guys are printing money. So what are you going to do about that? Are you going to continue to gamble the stock market? Are you going to continue to invest in these 401ks? Are you getting debased faster than you can save money? You know, what are you actually doing? And so when we look at the mechanisms that they've put in place for like an ETF where they don't actually owe people Bitcoin, you start to see this as, you know, we all know BlackRock is kind of the second arm of the Federal Reserve. And now you have to start looking at Coinbase, where a lot of this Bitcoin is going. And so if, let's just say these guys come out and they've accumulated all this Bitcoin on other people's money, they've stocked it, and they have, you know, obviously BlackRock and the Fed are not going to put their money where they don't have access to it. I should say Bitcoin. And when that happens and they finally go, all right, they've figured it out, you know, now's the time to burn all the bridges and go for broke. What do? They're going to fork the code, and then they're going to come up with some silly forked token that they owe, you know, pennies on the dollar for what they received, and they're still holding all the Bitcoin. I mean, this is a power move because these guys are not—they're not Americans first and foremost, right? Like they have no allegiance. The international banking vault has no allegiance to America. So what do? They accumulate, they move, and when it's time for them to do whatever they need to do with that Bitcoin, they're not giving any of that shit back. And I think that's the big play here. It's not, you know, it's not that one politician is going to do one thing or another. It's that the highest levels have set up a extraction system to see how much they can get before the entire thing implodes.
Yeah. some of that definitely seems right. all right. We've got about 10 minutes left in today's time allotment. We're going to shoot for about an hour, I think, for most days. Some days we may go over. We'll see how we go. We're kind of rolling and just feeling out what this thing is going to be like as we go here. But want to hit a couple of ad reads. There's one other topic that I'd like to switch to before we finish up as well, but want to just shout out to our partners. The first one is silentslnt.com/BTCvets. Get 15% off if you go to that link. Those guys make Faraday bags. So you can put your phone in it, you can put your gold card in it, whatever your wallet signing device is, to protect it from EMP and all that other kind of stuff. Go check out Black Sheep Ammunition. Those guys are awesome. Veteran-owned and veteran-operated. For your bit axe needs, you guys might have seen these bit axes floating around. It's the coolest new thing. They're these tiny little Bitcoin miners, and they basically take older, like, Bitmain type miners, and they take them apart and they take the chips and they make them into these super efficient little miners, and you can plug them in and they cost you less than $5 worth of electricity a day. And you can either solo mine, you can attach them to a mining pool, whatever you want to do. If you solo mine, I mean, look, you're 70 times more likely to win the Bitcoin subsidy, which right now is 3.125, if I recall correctly. Then you're 70 times more likely to win that than you are the lottery, the Powerball. So, yeah, man, check that out. Solosatoshi.com. And then finally, Punch Plate. That's my favorite seed plate. Lots of people have different things they like to do. Some people like to do little steel washers. There's all kinds of different plates out there. But Punch Plate I have found to be really freaking cool. Check them out, punchplate.com. Jordan, what's up?
I just want to piggyback on the Solo Satoshi Bitaxe miner. I'm driving around right now, and I've got one plugged into my truck, and so I am hashing every time I'm driving around, even though I feel like I'm just wasting time driving around doing these errands. I'm adding to the hash rate and increasing my chances of hitting a block subsidy. So just throwing that out there as an option for people.
That's actually quite hilarious. Jordan dropped a picture of this. He's really doing this. He's a maniac. Okay, that other topic real quick. So this was in the DIB, and the thing is, there's an article in Decrypt magazine that says, could Bitcoin become a bigger privacy threat than CBDCs? Now, granted, we've only got a few minutes left to talk about this. We could probably spend an hour on this particular topic, but it continues that privacy advocates in the crypto space are concerned about the lack of privacy on the Bitcoin network and believe that it poses a threat to financial privacy. They argue that the open and transparent nature of the Bitcoin blockchain allows governments to monitor citizen spending and other activities, while some worry that Bitcoin could be used as a CBDC with broad oversight. Others believe that Bitcoin's decentralized nature makes it difficult for governments to control. Who has thoughts on this?
I think the problem with that kind of like angle of attack or narrative is that the way that governments are going to structure things with Bitcoin in the future, there's inevitably going to be at least one government, like one major government, that tries to use Bitcoin to back a CBDC. So I think Bitcoiners and the Bitcoin community in general just need to get comfortable with the fact that there's going to be a lot of things that get done with Bitcoin that we don't approve of, and Bitcoin's for anybody, but not everybody.
Yeah, man. I mean, as much as many Bitcoiners hate it, like Jason Lowry's idea of what could happen could really happen. Like, to me, as soon as he started talking about it, I'm like, yeah, it's totally plausible. Why wouldn't they do that eventually? Like, if Bitcoin really is the thing that we think it is, if you're a nation state and you do not have some significant part of the hash power, that's probably not great. And if you don't have a treasury in Bitcoin, it's probably not great. I mean, Samson Mao is out there talking about this on the regular with heads of state. It's like, look, you know, the early movers are going to benefit. Just look at MicroStrategy right now. Like, that dude's a maniac. He has literally figured out how to hack the fiat matrix. And he's just going to, in my opinion, he's just going to keep doing it. Like, if you're playing your favorite video game, some MMO, and you found like the print money button, you would just keep doing that. You know what I mean? Until you couldn't do it anymore. So like, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think the more I think about this topic, the more I do think that we probably shouldn't be so excited about governments and large institutions taking it over, that might help NGU, but there's a lot of nefarious activity that's going to happen with that we need to be prepared for. But kind of regardless of how that plays out, I also think people don't need to stop thinking about like Bitcoin. Yeah, Bitcoin can mix a lot of things, but it's not going to like herald this utopian world. Like, there's going to be, even if it fixes like all these things, like the world's great, there's going to be some new problems and issues that bubble up either because of it or as a tertiary effect of it that people just kind of always need to be vigilant. There's no letting your guard down.
Any other comments here?
Hey, it's AC here. Just one thing on the delta between CBDCs and Bitcoin. I think that this might be a little bit overblown. I think the biggest threat of CBDCs is actually financial censorship. You know, we talk about social credit score or carbon credits or all that other bullshit. And the CBDC enables the government to be able to censor you financially. Bitcoin does not allow for something like that to take place unless there's a co-opting of miners and transactions. And then on the flip side of that, there's also an opportunity that we see in further Bitcoin development. You know, a lot of us already use Lightning for added levels of privacy. We've got another guy in the group, Average Gary, goes by whatever now, but he's a big proponent of eCash and Cashew and the ability for that to deconstruct a token and then reconstruct a brand new one for added privacy. So I think the innovation in the space really allows for further privacy, and it prohibits the ability of a CBDC to do financial censorship.
Yep, I agree with that. All the new sort of layer 2, layer 3, layer 4 technologies, maybe not all, but many of them are going to come with privacy by default. Because they're being built by people who believe in privacy. I'm one of those people that believes in privacy. I think this whole idea of, well, if you have nothing to hide, then you should be willing to show everything you do, is that straight from the devil. It's accusatory. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it's bullshit, because like, is the flip side of that true? Like, all these people who are like, oh, you're not allowed to drive your cars. It's like, are you going to share your private jet with me? Probably not. No? Okay. Same is true with all the other things, you know? Anyway, closing comments, and then we wrap.
One, not necessarily a comment, but I do want to have a request over to Jordan. I love all the content that you're putting out related to the fourth turning. I think that would be an amazing time, or, you know, some subsequent spaces.
Yeah, we could pick a couple of sound bites out of that and review them and then discuss them by all means. Yeah. Anybody else? Closing comments? All right, then. I guess that is a wrap. I would suggest to everybody that's listening, if you don't mind, check us out. Like, on the Bitcoin Veterans podcast, we do a video podcast every single week. We do them every Tuesday night now. Sometimes we move that around. Currently, we're doing them on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. That will appear live on Twitter as a video feed. If you want to go check that out, it'll be broadcast at the Bitcoin Veterans handle there. You can just follow the Bitcoin Veterans handle for that. I want to thank all the speakers that came here today and producer Jacob for producing the show. Really appreciate all of you taking your time to help people understand more about Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin is super important. It's like, in my opinion, the most important thing. It is the mission. Like, sometimes people are like, well, why are veterans interested in this thing? Well, it's because a lot of us signed a dotted line to basically put our bodies, we signed an unlimited check to the government, up to and including our life. Body parts, all the things, right? Go down range, get shot at, blown up, whatever the case may be. Because we thought we were doing something that mattered, that was good for America. And we find out many times that's not the case. And so a lot of us have learned that Bitcoin is the best hope for freedom. And we can get deeper into that in other shows, but like, that is the mission. That's why we're doing this thing. So I hope you guys understand that and understand that every single one of you are incredibly important to that mission. We're going to do this every single day, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern. We will see you all tomorrow. Love all you guys. Everybody, go have a great day. And crush it.